This is Dolores Cannon again with the Metaphysical Hour. And I hope everybody has made it through this bad weather with all the storms and everything. I think we're about ready to climb out of it here in Missouri. They're finally getting their power back on. But I don't think it's been that bad in the rest of the country anyway. All right. First, before we start, I want to give out the toll-free number for anybody who wants to call in. The number is 877-876-5227. 877-876-5227. And that number is good all over the world. Okay, now I have a special guest tonight. This is one of my authors, because those of you who know and have been listening to the program for the last year know that in addition to writing and lecturing, I also have a publishing company, and I have a lot of books that we have put out. And the guest tonight is Donald Hicks, and he has written a book called The Divinity Factor that we published. And we're going to be discussing the book, but there's a whole lot of information in here. A lot of it has to do with creating your reality and getting what you want. But there's a lot of other things, too, that we're going to discuss that are in the book. But you're there, aren't you, Don?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Where do you live?
In Virginia.
Virginia. Okay.
Yes.
You haven't had the bad weather out there yet, have you?
We haven't had the snow, but we've certainly had our share of cold.
Oh, okay, because here has just been one bout after another of the snow and ice.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it's knocked a lot of people out with the power and everything.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that on the news.
Okay.
Looks ferocious out there.
Well, Don, tell us something about yourself before we get into the book.
I've been an author since the early 80s. This book was my first spiritual book, and I've had a desire to write something spiritual for a long time. I was more or less just waiting for the right moment to write it. I just kind of follow the signs that are around me, and I finally reached that moment. So that's more or less where it came.
Yeah, because finally sometimes everything falls together.
Exactly.
The way it's supposed to.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, I was wondering why you decided to write this kind of a book. Your other books were on different subjects, weren't they?
Yes, they were.
What were the other books about? You can tell people the names if you want.
Yes. Well, I originally had written a lot of nonfiction books. I would like to write fiction, but I really haven't broken into that market. Again, the timing just hasn't been right.
But the whole different way of writing, too.
Yeah, it's a totally different way of writing. It's a fun way of writing. You don't have the accountability, and you... with the nonfiction books, of course, you have a lot of research, but the research is fun. So
yeah, and you have to stick to what is believable and provable, I guess you would say.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, where fiction, you can just let your mind go off in all kinds of directions.
Yes, exactly. And when you get into religion, you're in a gray area, because a lot of people read religious books and they feel that it's fact, but it's really hard to show any fact because it's based on what people believe.
Oh, yeah, I've had people say, can I prove these things? And nobody can really prove anything, really, when it comes down to it.
Yeah, exactly.
But this is not really a religious book.
Right. It's more a spiritual guideline.
Yeah, that's what I consider it to be, because there is a difference in that.
Yes, there is.
Uh-huh.
And... I've written a book. It was called How to Become an Effective eBay Seller.
Oh.
I'm sure the people listening know how quickly eBay evolves, and the book was outdated in about 6 months. So,
I was wondering, was it before its time or what?
No, it was perfect timing, and the people who read it loved it, but eBay evolved so quickly that, you know, it was very... had a very short shelf life, I guess you'd say.
Oh, yeah, and it's still evolving, too.
Yeah.
So it's changing even more.
Yes, it is, every day. So I've also wrote a book on sexuality, which a lot of people, they have trouble reconciling the two. They say, how can you write a book on sexuality and turn around and write a book about spirituality?
Yeah, and it sounds like it would be opposites or something.
Yeah, but it's not. And I think that's an important lesson for people to understand that, you know, spiritual people, they, you know, have sexual needs and desires also. And I believe that if you want to call God a creator or, you know, whatever term you'd like to use, he made sex enjoyable to us for a reason. So it all kind of ties together.
Uh-huh. But, that's what I mean. It is kind of different to go from one topic that to another.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. That book for me was actually a diversion.
the one about the sexuality?
Sexuality. It was a diversion. It kind of evolved. At the same time, it was one of those things that was meant to be. I had some questions about sex, and I went through the medical hierarchy asking these questions until I reached some of the most world-renowned researchers on the subject, and eventually they were sharing their research with me, and, you know, I was learning a lot of facts that I found were interesting, and I saw a lot of myths that were circulating through the society, and I found myself in a position. I'm like, hey, wait a minute, you know, I'm a writer, here I am, I have these researchers providing me with information, I can see the public has a need for this information, so there you are. It was, like you said, one of those things that just fell together.
Uh-huh.
So, and the Divinity Factor more or less followed right on its heels. I was actually working on the two books simultaneously.
Yeah, that's what I do. I work on several books at one time.
Yeah, exactly. And I think people can relate in their life. You know, that's the way things work.
What's the name of the sexuality book?
It was originally titled Understanding Female Sexuality and... Understanding the G-spot and female sexuality.
Okay, I was thinking in case anybody was interested in that book.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, a new publisher, that book did very, very well. So well that a larger publisher decided to pick it up for me.
Uh-huh.
And they picked it up. They did change the title a little bit. But you could find either one if you use, like, Amazon or Barnes & Noble. .com, you know, through the internet.
Well, a lot of times on the internet now, you just have to type in the author's name,
right,
and the thing they've written comes
up. Yeah, mine. I know it's critical. You have to type the Donald L. as in Lee Hicks.
Is there other Don Hicks out there?
Yeah, there's a few other Don Hickses out there. Or it tries to, you know how searches go. That tries to put a Don King with Lee Hicks, and he pulls up books that kind of way. So,
yeah, they misspell my first name, and they come up with all kinds of things on there.
I'm sure.
So I know what you mean. But one thing about the Divinity Factor, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to publish it, is I've done lectures on creating your reality,
mm-hmm.
and you go into a lot of step-by-step and mm-hmm. instructions and things that I think people can identify with very easily.
Sure.
But there are several things I wanted you to explain or to go into.
Okay.
Well, you were talking about everything is energy.
Yes.
And I know that because I work in this field all the time, but a lot of people are not familiar with that. Do you want to explain what you mean?
I'd love to, because...
You know, how we can use this, because they don't understand. We are all energy, and we can control things.
People, even myself or yourself, I'm sure you can relate to this, it's easy to forget how much energy is going around you at any given minute. Like right now, our voices are traveling, you know, across the airwaves as a form of energy. The cell phones, there are cell phone waves that bounce around the room all the time that you would never think were there. You would just forget about them and take them for granted. Television signals the same way. They're in the air all the time. There's heat and cold exchanging places. We're just surrounded by energy. We're totally immersed in it, and we tend to forget it. We tend to ignore that it's there. But you can actually tune yourself into that energy, and you can begin to tap into that energy. And I think a lot of people, as they become more and more aware of this energy around them, and they can develop their skills at actually tuning into that energy and eventually becoming able to use the energy to their benefit. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that's explained in the book. One of the favorite ways I like to explain it is, because I think a lot of people can relate to this, is if you've ever just been doing something and somebody's name pops into your head, and it might be Mom. You know, you think Mom, and you think, why did I think of her? And about that time, the phone rings, and it's Mom. And I believe that it's an energy that we pick up from that person, and I kind of go into more detail in the book. But
picking up on their thoughts without realizing it.
Yeah, you're picking up on their thoughts without realizing it. Mm-hmm. And you know, again, people can just attune themselves to become better at that, and it can benefit you in a lot of unexpected ways.
Well, I know, you know, but I've found in my work too, you know, we are energy. Everything is energy.
Sure.
Everything around us.
Yeah, if you got a desk in front of you, you know, science has already proven that the desk on a molecular basis is energy.
Yeah, everything is alive. Everything is cognizant,
right.
I guess you would say. But that's going a little far afield from this book, anyway.
it's a very deep subject too. It's
uh-huh.
you really have
but
to stop and think about
we
it.
We realize we are energy, then mm-hmm. we can. Well, I always tell people at my lectures, we create our world around us. We
mm-hmm.
create our reality.
Sure.
And a lot of people don't like everything you have in your life. You have put there.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't like to think that because their lives are not very happy. You know, they've got things in their lives they don't want to be there.
Right.
But I tell them, if you have created it, once you realize that, you can uncreate it if you don't want it there.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
You can draw to you what you do want.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
That's the same principle that you've written about anyway.
Very well put, yeah. that's a good summary of it.
But one thing, too, you were writing about the life force, which is really energy, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And life force thieves.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
We have, I believe that in each person, in everything, actually, there is a life force.
Yeah.
And unwittingly, we compete for that life force. We gain it through
what?
Attention. Generally speaking.
Oh, you kind of faded out there, yeah?
Oh, yeah. I think we gain this life force through attention.
Uh-huh.
When you pay attention, you're actually paying something in a roundabout way. But I think we just crave this life force, and we don't even realize it. But if you watch people, if you observe people, the way they interact and the little dramas they have between each other for control of the situation, then you become very aware of how people are actually competing. They crave and compete for this life force.
Uh-huh.
And I go into...
So in the book you have what you call the PMs.
Right, I have...
The personality modes, four of them, aren't they? Different personality types?
Yeah, there's... they are kind of a type, and at the same time, I prefer the term mode because they're not something that is with us 24 hours a day.
Uh-huh. That's what you mean by the dramas. We interact different ways.
Yeah. we can more or less adopt these modes. We learn them as children. We learn them without realizing it, which that's something I touch upon in the book. And I've witnessed it many, many times. I'm sure everybody that's listening has witnessed it. One of the times I've witnessed it most often is when you go into a supermarket and they usually have these bubblegum machines or little machines with toys or whatnot. And as soon as the children walk by, of course, they always want a quarter. And that's when the drama starts, is right then. When they ask mom or dad, whoever they're with, you know, hey, can I have a quarter for this to put in this machine? If the parent tells them no, that's when you're going to see it happen.
Uh-huh.
Usually the first personality mode that these children use is a poor me.
The poor me, because you've got four of them here.
Yeah, I've got four of them there. The poor me is when they cry and, you know, we've all seen it. They, you know, the kids cry. They, oh, no, you know, I've got to have it. Please, please. And this and that. And it's kind of a poor me. And we see a lot of people as adults who adopt this personality mode and use it to their benefit.
Mm-hmm.
They're the coworker who always has some type of drama going on in their life. They always have something. Everything that happens to them is bad. If they won $1 million, it would be terrible.
A lot of those people don't. They couldn't exist without it anyway.
Yeah, they need that drama in their life to keep them going. It's the only way they understand.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they draw attention to themselves. And as I mentioned,
you won't believe what happened to me now. You know.
Right. Exactly. So.
It's kind of like the victim mode, isn't it?
It's a lot like a victim mode. And opposite to the poor me is the intimidator. The intimidator is kind of the high school bully. The intimidator can be the child that when you don't give them a quarter at the gumball machine, they say, I hate you, I want to kill you, this sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, and because we've all seen kids yell that at their parents. And you know they don't mean it.
Yeah, I don't love you anymore, but you won't give it to me.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You know, but they try to bully or intimidate the parent into doing what they want.
And embarrassing them, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh. In the stores, I mean.
In the store, it can be very embarrassing.
Yeah.
We have another, which is called the aloof. The aloof is the person who more or less bulls and goes off by themselves and is quiet and won't talk to the parent. You know, they put on the pouty little lip and
yeah.
Cross their arms and they just block everybody and everything out.
Uh-huh.
And the interrogator is the fourth personality mode. That's usually you see an ascension to a certain degree in the child. In the child's maturity when they reach an interrogator stage, because they begin asking the question and they try to find answers. And they begin asking the parent, you know, why can't I have this? Why is bubblegum not good for me? And, you know, sometimes they will use that, their questions to try to talk the parent into giving them the quarter they want. But there really are a lot of personality modes. There's a lot more than the four I cover in the book, but they're the predominant four.
And as adults, it's the same thing.
Yeah, as an adult, we generally fall back on these, and a lot of times we don't even realize it. But I've seen it a lot in counseling with couples who have abusive issues where it may be it's generally the male is abusive and the female for some reason is attracted to an abusive man. And a lot of people look at the relationship and they're like, they'll look at the female and say, you know, why did she do that? She went from John Doe who was abusive to Tim Doe who's now abusive to, somebody else who's abusive.
Yes, that's what I found in my work. They get into a pattern.
They fall into a cycle, right, and they seek out that person. And if you look, there's usually a correlation between their personality mode and their relationships. The poor me is especially vulnerable to seeking out men who will abuse her.
And that would be the bully, the intimidator?
The intimidator, generally speaking.
Yeah.
And the two, they compete over who's going to be in control of the money, who's going to be in control of the decisions. They compete over everything. And the way they do it is the intimidator will try to yell and scream and bully the poor me and to get their way for a while. And then when the poor me can't take it, they go into their poor me mode and, you know, oh, my life's so bad, you hurt me so bad. And they turn it around and, you know, they're the victim now. And they, you know, get their way through using that mode.
Uh-huh.
And
that's why sometimes these people will feel attracted to these different ones.
Then. Yeah, exactly. Because they find that using that personality mode generally works. Because that person, the opposite person, you know, has dealt with that in the past in their life because of their own personality mode. Mm-hmm. So the two have a natural affinity. They're drawn together, you know, just due to that.
What's the adult version of the interrogator?
Well, the adult version is the same, but the interrogator is kind of similar to the intimidator, but they're just less aggressive. The interrogator is the person who, when the husband comes home from work, the wife is standing at the door, where have you been, why are you late, you know, asking all these questions.
Yeah, that's the interrogator, okay.
That's how they gain control of the situation, is by directing pointed questions at the other person. You know, they put the other person into defense, in a defensive stance, because of the questions they're just hurtling. And what benefits us all is, once we recognize what personality mode we have, is to learn to use that in a positive manner rather than a negative manner. It's like the interrogator we were just speaking about. Rather than kind of grill her husband when he walks in from work, she can use those skills elsewhere and become very efficient in, you know, finding deals for the family or finding out information from the teacher about how the children are doing in school. You know, she can use her information gathering skills as an interrogator for beneficial things and not use them for negative things.
Well, I can see the aloof personality would be like the opposite of the intimidator. Where the intimidator wants to bully, the aloof one will just ignore you. And he said he'll get his way that way. I just won't speak to you. I'll
go
in the other room, you know. And either way, they're trying to get there what they want in these different ways. Would that be true?
Yeah, it's very true. And what's really sad is they can have all the things they want without using these modes. As we discuss, you know, discuss in the book. But
a lot of it is learned at childhood and the way they're brought up, and they don't know any different.
Right. One of my favorite sayings is that change is inevitable, but growth is optional. And things in your life are always going to change. Your circumstances, your surroundings, your job, your work, your health, the food you like, the clothes you like. Things are continually going to change. Whether we grow with that change or not is up to us. It's optional. And, you know, I think that's important for people to understand, is sometimes you really have to step back from your life and just observe. And through that observation, you can really learn and benefit.
because, you know, that's the thing. We get so involved in our lives, we don't even really see who is the one who is causing the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a lot of maturity to be able to admit that and then grow.
Sure. Exactly.
Otherwise, you say, well, it's not my fault. You know, it's your fault. You're the one that's causing all the problems.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sometimes a hard pill to swallow, but it ends up being very beneficial when we can do that. So, and it kind of, this kind of goes hand in hand with what we were just speaking about, creating your own reality.
I was going to get to that.
A lot of people find that they think they want something, and when they get it, they don't want it at all.
Oh, yeah, I always tell them, be careful what you ask for, you might get it.
Exactly.
And once, you know, people, they send it out there as energy, we were going to talk about how to do that, then when it comes back, sometimes they'll say, well, I changed my mind, I don't really want it now.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that's, so I said, be careful what you ask for, but it's like having a child, you've created something, you can't just disown it, when it comes to you. You're
right.
Responsible for it.
Yeah, that's a great analogy.
It's your creation, you know?
Uh-huh.
And okay. But I know you have a different steps in the book on how to create what you want.
Right.
I always tell people, first you have to know what you want.
Yeah.
So many people don't.
I don't think anybody really does. I try to allow God to guide me. And I would hope everybody can do that on their own. But sometimes it takes going through a learning process. And sometimes the learning process is great, and sometimes it's not. It's kind of like you said with the child, you know. Sometimes you can make it that, you can create that child, and it's great. And sometimes you're not happy with the end result. So it's just one of those things.
But, you know, I have people that say, well, like some of them say, I want $1 million. I want to win the lottery.
Mm-hmm.
But other things, well, I want to be happy or I want a house. But they're very vague about it.
Right.
And you have to know what you want before you can get it.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Before you can create it anyway.
I agree with that. But to a certain degree, we're creating every minute of every hour that we're awake. We create through many different ways, but mainly through our thoughts.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, we end up with a lot of things that we don't want until we're very careful on, and we can actually change our thinking to be more positive. And to be more...
Think of it as like the universe, or whoever you're dealing with says, well, I'm not sure what you want. Is this what you want? Okay, we'll give you this and see if that's... No, that's not what I wanted. Well, then be more specific the next time. But you had in the book the different steps, you know, what you go through on how to create. You know, I've got the book here. That's why I was marking some places in it. I edited the book, but then I go through so many that I, you know, forget a lot of what's in there.
Yeah.
But you were... Oh, it's talking here about the different step one, step two.
Mm-hmm.
Remember what you wrote or not?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, because if it's your book, you should know it better than I do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, let's see.
Of how to create your reality.
Yeah. I was just trying to find the section in the book that...
It's on page 129 is where that part starts, you know.
Okay.
How to start, for, you know... creating what you want. I think that's where it begins.
Yeah, because it's kind of in the background of the book. You're covering that in the chapters prior to it.
Yeah.
And actually, it just kind of leads up to that.
You want to bring out that part first, or what?
Well, I think what you're referring to more or less is what I call the delivery system.
Yeah.
Yeah, and...
Cause, yeah, that'd be good. We can call it a system and kind of give it briefly, you know, because if people want to know more steps, they can get the book then.
Well, the first step...
Idea of what you mean by the system.
The first step we have here listed is step one, which is creating a place to commune with God. Since this is going world round, that has a lot of ramifications, because there are a lot of different beliefs about who God is, what God is, and so forth. And I can only put this in my own perspective. I believe that we are all God in a certain way.
Yeah, I do too.
I believe that God is a greater body, and we're kind of cells in that body, so to speak, as an analogy. We are all part of God, and as a matter of fact, everything is part of God.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in using this step, getting back to this step, you've got to determine what you think is God. But for me, what works is I like to go out in nature, go out in the woods or in a park or someplace that's very peaceful and very quiet, and just spend a little time communing with God, talking to God, just sharing your feelings, what's going on with your life right now. A lot of times I ask for signs, which when you become aware of watching for signs, they come very readily.
And some of the people would say, oh, it was coincidence, but...
I don't believe in coincidence.
I don't either.
I don't believe there's anything that happens by chance or accident or coincidence. Everything's already under control when it happens for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And as people
push it off, but those of us who are really in this can understand it. You can see all these little things, and they'll say, "Oh, okay, that's another way of telling me."
Yeah, exactly.
I'm on the right track or not.
Uh huh. And that goes back to what you were saying about when we're not sure what we want. Sometimes we're better off not to ask, or we're better off to ask, you know, God to provide us with what we need, more so than what we want.
If you're looking for something specific, you should be, you know, pretty exact about what it is you want.
Yeah, exactly.
But you have step one is, you know, creating a place where you can commune.
Yeah.
That way you can be in touch with this creative force.
Yeah.
You said you like the woods, but it could be anything, couldn't it?
It can be, you know, a lot of people live in the city, and it's difficult to get to a woods, and the parks are crowded, and so you can do it any place. You can set aside just your easy chair, just some place that's comfortable for you. It really doesn't matter where.
Mm-hmm.
I mention in here, too, that in that place, I like to have a radio. Because
that's an interesting part of the book.
A lot of times, as I said, when I'm communing with God and when I'm asking for guidance, I'll turn the radio on low in the background. And a lot of times I say, God, just tell me in the third song that comes on, just give me some kind of an answer. And, you know, you would be amazed at how often a clear message will come through in a song that you've listened to hundreds of times before, and you listen to the song and with the question in mind, you hear it in a totally different tone. You know, it just has a totally different meaning to you.
I think you said you don't count the music is playing at the time you ask the question.
Right, exactly. Yeah, if they're in the middle of a song or... if they are, it's a commercial, you don't count commercial jingles.
Uh-huh.
Come out, you ask for the third full song from start to beginning that you hear.
Uh-huh.
So if they're in the middle of a song, it's not going to count. You begin with the next song will be your first, then your second, and then your third. And that's just a way that you for certain, you know that that's the particular song. So you're not thinking, well, you know, did this one count, or did that one count, or did the jingle one, the commercial, did that count? and it's kind of a commitment between yourself and God. Or for the people who believe in angels, you know, I attribute a lot of that, kind of the more menial spiritual work, I guess you would say.
Well, I always say We do have angels, and I tell people we have a guardian angel or a guide,
yeah,
whatever you want to call it, that is assigned to you when you're born,
mm-hmm,
and it's with you all your life.
Yeah.
And that's usually the one we try to commune with.
Yeah.
But, you know, we may have more than one angel assigned to us.
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh. Is that what you mean like that?
Yeah. I more or less, direct questions like that, you know, I will ask both God and my guardian angel. And whichever provides the answer is really incidental to me. You know, but I just allow both of them to do whichever can provide the answer to do so.
But I think it's an interesting concept, though, to have it be in the third song,
mm-hmm,
whatever the words are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it really works if you use it. It's incredible.
I think you did say don't do it while you're driving.
It's probably not a good idea.
Because our angels have got enough trouble.
They've got enough to watch over us. So they've got enough watching over us to do when we're driving or other activities. That's part of the reason I like to pull that part of seeking advice into the communing process, because you're someplace where you're safe or basically safe, the safest can be expected, and comfortable, relaxed. So your angel doesn't have a lot of other tasks they have to take care of.
And then they can give you the message that way.
They can give you the message.
Well, when you're creating what you want, do you, I don't remember it's in your book or not, but do you suggest visualizing?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because that's the way I tell people to see it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Which can be good for some people, because that's an area where I say be vague. Because if you visualize yourself in a brand new Lexus that's black and has, you know, chrome rims or whatever.
Yeah.
And what the universe wants you to have instead is maybe not an Lexus, but a new Chevrolet.
But do you have to settle?
Well, you may or you may not.
Okay.
Sometimes it's in your benefit to settle. because there's a plan for you, and that's kind of what you have to recognize. And it's always working in the background, and maybe part of your resources weren't meant to go. Maybe 90% of your resources weren't meant to go to a Lexus. Maybe only 50% were meant to go to a car, because you have other dreams and aspirations too.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I try to be vague in the visualization process.
Okay. But that's what I think is part of the creation, is being able to see it. Then you give it life. You give it reality that way.
Yeah, I just kind of surround it with a fog. And let the details fill in themselves.
Okay.
Just imagine yourself driving a nice new car. Now, I think that's enough.
But, you know, going back to the life piece, I just thought of that. In my work, sometimes we call them psychic vampires, which is a horrible name,
mm-hmm,
but it means being around some people who just zap you. They zap your energy. They don't know they're really doing it, but you can feel it. After they leave you, you're just completely worn out.
I agree wholeheartedly. Yeah, and there's a lot of different. There, pretty much any time someone adopts one of the personality modes, they're becoming a vampire, so to speak, a psychic vampire, as you put it.
That's not a good term, but that's the only way to describe it. They are sucking the
energy. Yeah, they're just draining the life force from you.
Uh-huh.
And we can definitely feel it.
Some people say, oh, I wish that person wouldn't come over to see me, because after they leave, I'm just completely exhausted,
mm-hmm,
without realizing they're stealing this from them.
Mm-hmm. And we can see the flip side of it, too. There's a person around you who's very bright and bubbly,
uh-huh,
and I talk about this in the book, too, that the personality mode they are is, I call it the life of the party. You know, they're the person that's everybody just gravitates toward, and we don't always know why.
They are feeding you energy, isn't that?
They're feeding you energy, and they have just tapped into the universe in a sense that they don't even realize they're doing it. But whenever you give, you receive. And that's what's happening. They give their energy freely, mm-hmm. so they receive energy freely.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we can all learn how to do that. We can all learn to become the life of the party.
Uh-huh.
We can be that person that everyone wants to be around rather than being the aloof or the intimidator or someone who is really going to bring you down when you're around them.
Yeah, the poor me's are always the ones that bring you down.
The poor me's will bring you down. Yes.
Every time.
Uh-huh. They will throw all of their problems on you.
Okay. Well, there's another part I just noticed in the book here. You're talking about one of the laws. There are definite laws of the universe.
Sure.
In mm-hmm. metaphysics, we begin to realize this.
Mm-hmm.
But you have the one here that says the one law of the universe is that all things that harmonize with the universe can be measured in denominations of three.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how did you come to that with the number?
The number three?
Yeah. Talk about that.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of different ways. It wasn't any one particular source. It's a collective source. We see it in the background of a lot of religions, the world religions. I'm guessing many people are familiar with Christianity, and of course we have the number three, just splattered throughout Christianity. Christ arose in 3 days. You have the Holy Trinity, which is Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. And through a lot of observation and allowing God to communicate with me, you know, I was able to understand that three, the triune, is a very holy number. And you can begin to, when you can look at things and measure them in threes, you can see that they are, I'm not sure the exact term I'm seeking here, but I would say correct, universally correct. Where when you see things in two, they're a little off. As an example, we measure our time in lots of different blocks of threes.
Yes.
We have past,
hours, you mean? What?
Past, present, future.
Yeah.
That's three measures that we use. We use, for the day, we measure that in, 24 hours. It's made up of seconds and minutes and hours.
Yeah, morning, noon, and night.
Morning, noon, night, that's a good way to put it. There are a lot of things that just click together in threes that you don't
see. Like a universal pattern, I guess you would say?
There's a pattern there, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That they are correct, I guess is the only way to put it. Where if you look at other numbers, you don't see the same harmony. Two is a good example because you get things like the he-she. And, the he-she is, not to offend anyone, but, it's not something that's natural. It's something that man has more or less concocted, I guess you would say, rather than something that occurs naturally. And the number three, I give a lot of examples in the book. But the number three, you can see how these things occur naturally.
Mm-hmm.
So, and after, it's one of those things, it's kind of like coincidences, where if you learn to observe coincidences in your life, they eventually become a form of guidance. The number three follows that same pattern. You look at things, and if you can measure it in threes, you eventually can understand that you can see a certain harmony there, and you can use that in your life.
Is that why you have this demonstration about the third song?
The third
on the radio?
Song. That's why I chose the number three. Yes.
That.
Yeah, and I really think that would work for most people if they used the fourth or the second, but the third's the best way to go because three is, you know, the divine number.
Okay. I was just kind of going through a lot of this, but there are several other laws of the universe, too, aren't there?
Yes, there are.
You want to talk to me about some of them?
There's so many. Seven or eight that I'm aware of, which I didn't put
I know some that I was talking about, but you might have some others.
Yeah.
The one that I always go by is the law of abundance.
Uh-huh.
There's always enough for everybody.
Oh, yeah, and people don't understand that. Man has a lot of fallacies in his thinking. One of our greatest fallacies is the term need. I don't believe that need exists. What we want to do is we want to make everything that we want to call it a need. We say we need a new shirt, but we don't really need that shirt. We have shirts that we can wear. So we, in actuality, we want that shirt. We don't need it. We want it. But people want to call it a need because it makes it sound like it's more important or more dire that they get that object.
Well, like with the law of abundance, there you have the poor me in there saying, well, you know, I don't have enough money, my husband
right.
doesn't make enough, we can't pay the rent, you know, and it's always thinking, I don't have enough.
Yeah, exactly.
But not realizing, the law of abundance says there's always enough for everybody.
Right, exactly.
It depends on your belief system, really.
Uh-huh.
If you believe you're going to have the money for the rent, you're going to have the money for the food, you can get a better house.
Right.
That it's not taking away from anybody else because there is enough to go for everybody.
Right. Well, I can even take that a step further, and you become more generous. You begin to live beneficially is what the way I like to term it. You don't live for your own benefit, but you live for the benefit of others.
Yeah.
When you realize that in, as you call it, the law of abundance exists, and there is plenty of stuff for everyone, plenty of food, plenty of air, plenty of water, you feel you can give more freely, I guess is a good way to put it.
Yeah.
And, of course, as you give, as we know from some of the other laws, you receive. So the more you give, the more you receive.
You don't want to go because there's a law of abundance. You also don't want to get into the greedy part either.
Right. Yeah, you don't want to be greedy.
There's enough, then I can take all I want. That's the total opposite.
Well, that's actually a denial of the law of abundance.
Uh-huh.
Because people, they say they believe in the law of abundance, but if they're greedy, they don't. Because
uh-huh.
they're afraid that it won't be there in the future. And they want to get it now.
They want to hoard.
They want to hoard, exactly. That's a good way of putting it. And if they want to hoard, then they don't really believe in the law of abundance.
Uh-huh.
They might say they do, but they don't. So, and there's a lot of people out there who are that way.
Well, I know in my business, you know, you're always having money coming and going. But that's
sure.
one thing. Money is energy, really.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
yeah.
It comes and goes. That's what it's supposed to do.
Exactly.
But, you know, and you need a certain amount of money for a project or for something or payroll or whatever, and it doesn't do any good, I found, to worry about it because if you believe it's going to be there,
mm-hmm.
it comes. And usually it just comes at the last minute. And it's always exactly what you need.
Yeah, uh-huh, exactly.
And they can't you give us a little more? Why does it always have to be just enough? And
well, that's
less?
What you ask for. You got exactly what you ask for.
Yeah, but if you believe and you have faith that you know it's going to happen,
right?
It saves a lot of worry about it.
Oh, yeah, sure. And
other people would be saying, well, you know, you're crazy. What do you mean you're not worrying about what you're going to do, how you're going to pay for this?
Mm-hmm.
But if you believe it and have faith in it, it will always come through for you.
Sure.
And that's the difference. You have to learn to trust.
Yeah.
trust in the universe, trust in God and the angels, whatever you want to say.
Exactly.
Know?
Yeah, that's sometimes you. Some people find it easier to trust in God. You know, if they have some kind of personification, they can put, you know, to the universe and call it God. Or call it an angel, or call it whatever is comfortable for you. And if you think, you know, my angel will take care of me, then...
But it's so easy for a lot of people to stay in that poor me mode, you know, victim mode, than to realize they can take command of the situation.
Yeah, I agree with that. And
another one, Tirti, you have the law of just rewards.
Uh-huh.
And... of course, I've got another word for that, but...
Well, yeah, I was trying to be kind.
It's karma.
Yeah, it's karma.
It's karma, that's what I call it. The law of just rewards.
Uh-huh.
You want to explain that?
Yeah, it more or less is karma. It's simply that what comes around goes around, or what goes around comes around, whichever way
you... You're out of it. You're going to have to pay it one way or the other.
Right, exactly. And... a lot of the thing that disturbs me about karma is not necessarily karma, I guess you wouldn't say, but some people, the law of just rewards, even they look at it as a situation of punishment, of actions and choices and punishments, I guess you would say.
Yeah, they say God is punishing me.
Right.
And they blame God. Actually, it's themselves that is doing the set of the whole situation. Eh?
Right.
What do you mean they're being punished for something?
Yes, and all-loving God does not punish. And all-loving God and all-powerful God doesn't need anything from us.
No.
And they don't punish. They might desire our love, and it's beneficial for us to love them, but they certainly have no need to punish. And that's, I try to look at it and explain it as a situation where there are actions and there are consequences.
Mm-hmm.
If you climb up on top of your roof and you say, I'm going to defy the law of gravity and step off, and you step off and fall and break your ankle, it's not a matter of gravity is punishing you. It's a matter of you had an action, you made an action, and there is a certain and expectable consequence to that action.
Yeah.
And the law of just rewards is very similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are certain actions that we do, and there's going to be a consequence. And generally, if your action is negative, the consequence will be negative. And if your action is positive, the consequence will be positive.
You know, they always say, whatever, in metaphysics, whatever you send out comes
back
to you 10 times.
Uh-huh. Yep, exactly.
So you definitely don't want the negativity to come back to you 10
right.
times.
Right. Right.
It's a whole lot better. They say, well, you know, I can do what I want. But it's a whole lot better to send out the positive and have that energy come back to you 10
right.
times.
And that's, again, how when you live beneficially, as we were talking about a little earlier, you're constantly just putting out good. And so you get back good all the time.
Uh-huh.
And we can see that in people, let's say Oprah Winfrey. Maybe some people don't like her, but you know, that's what I see.
Yeah.
Is,
and they criticize her, but she's doing what she wants to do, and it is benefiting a lot of people.
It benefits a lot of people, and she, in turn, is a very wealthy, powerful person.
But you see, something's working right there.
Yeah, so this kind of goes back to something you said earlier, and I wanted to get back to. You were talking about money and payroll and this and that.
Yeah.
My friend and I were talking about this one time, and a thought just came to me, and I explained it to him. I can't take credit for this. I think it was God that told me how to explain it to him. But what I did is I laid some money in my hand, and I said, you should live with your hand open.
Yeah.
So, because when you close that hand, God can't put any money back into it. When you've got, when you take a dollar bill and you hang on to it so tight, or the expression people use a lot of times is you squeeze a nickel till the buffalo burps.
Yeah.
When you hold on to money that tight, you know, your hand is closed and God can't put money back into your hand.
Yeah.
But when you have your hand open and people are free to take that money, God can also put the money right back. So it's kind of like what you were saying, you know, it comes and it goes, and you just have to have faith that it'll be there.
Yeah, because that's what, in my work, is what they've said, you know, it's energy.
Right.
Money is nothing but energy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's supposed to come and go and flow.
Uh-huh.
We're coming to the time we've got to stop, because we have stopped 5 minutes before the hour. But if people want to contact you, do you have a website or something that they can contact you?
Yeah, the easiest way to contact me is I have email. It's my email address is Divinity Factor, just like the title of the book without the word the, divinityfactor@aol.com.
Okay, and that is the name of the book, and you can look it up on Amazon, or you can...
Amazon, or Barnes & Noble, or...
find out about it.
Yep, check with
your
local...
rather they would email rather than... go on your website.
I have a website also, and the website is, of course, www, and it's God is our friend.
Oh, all together?
All together.
God is our friend.
.com.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then if they want to contact you and find out about anything else, then?
Yeah, exactly. They can reach me through the website, or they can write to me directly.
Okay, and everybody, I think, knows my website now by now, Ozark Mountain.
Ozark Mountain.
Yeah, O-Z-A-R-K-M-T .com.
The MT, I think, has caught me a couple of times, so I was going to get that in.
Okay, because we're going to have to sign off now. Our Don, who runs the show, is going to pull the plug anyway to get the next host on here. But thanks a lot for being on the show tonight.
I enjoyed it.
And,
thank you for having me.
Okay, and I want to thank everybody out there. Good night.